what to do with what you get. In the game Monopoly, every time you circle the board and you pass go, what happens? You collect $200, right? And so we're using that imagery to talk about what we do with the money that we get. In fact, I encouraged everybody last week to pick up a Monopoly piece of money out there on the table in the lobby and to take that home with you as a prayer reminder. You could put it on the dashboard of your car. We have ours on the bathroom mirror. Maybe you keep it in your wallet or your checkbook. And it's just a tangible reminder to pray, not to pray for more money necessarily, but to pray for wisdom to use the money that you get. Well, after church, it was kind of funny. I noticed Peggy Marksberry out in the foyer, and she picked up two bills, one for her and one for her husband, CD. And so I asked him how much she gave him, and it was a 50, which is better than a 1, 5, 10, or 20. So then I said, okay, Peggy, what'd you take for you? And she had a 500 for her. I started laughing, and he said, yeah, that's pretty much the way it goes. I did ask her permission to tell that story. Didn't ask CDs, but I asked her. Anyway, let me ask you a question. Okay, how many of you would say that at one time or another, money has put a strain on a relationship in your life? You don't have to raise your hand, but just think about that. How many times has money created stress? The fact is, money is a major source of anxiety for a lot of people, for a lot of families, right? Money problems continue to be the leading cause of divorce in our country today. For one reason or another, many of us, we can't give like we want to give, we can't save like we want to, we can't relax like we want to because we feel this constant financial pressure all the time. Well, you'll be glad to know that in my study and preparation for this sermon, I learned the secret of why so many people struggle with finances. Now, it's pretty profound. You might want to grab a pen and jot this down. The reason people struggle with money is because they spend more than they make. That's actually it. That is the problem that many of us face. Now, granted, some people make so little money that even what they have, they can't even buy the bare necessities of life. People are homeless. People are really struggling, and I understand that. But I think for a lot of people, it's what Rick Warren says, their yearnings exceed their earnings. And it's just that we want, we want, we want. Solomon wrote nearly 3,000 years ago, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all that he has. A foolish person devours everything that they have. We looked at earning last week. Today, we're going to talk about spending, that a foolish man devours everything. Our plan each week in this series is to look at a different parable each week that Jesus told that in some way deals with money because he talked a lot about money. Well, the parable today is the one about the prodigal son. Now, we usually use this story to talk about sin and to talk about grace. The forgiveness of the father is just so incredible, and the love that he had for his wayward son shows that he loves us no matter how foolish we might become. The story is also really important because of the older brother's attitude toward his wayward brother and their refusal to forgive. It's really one of the most beautiful stories in the whole Bible. But for our purposes this morning, we're going to look at this story specifically as it relates to money, as it relates to the prodigal son's attitude toward money. See, our lives intersect in different ways with spending and with materialism, and with greed, and those things have the potential to really undermine our lives if we aren't careful. We need to be cautious about our finances. Now, for some of us, maybe some drastic lifestyle changes need to take place, but for all of us, we just need to be wise. Like we said, just we're praying for wisdom in how we use what we get. Let me show you some mistakes that the prodigal son made, and then we'll look at some things that he did with the help of his father to turn things around. For one thing, this guy overestimated the importance of wealth. Jesus said in Luke 15:11, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. And so he divided his property between them. Father, give me what's mine. Now, he had probably been fantasizing about this for years, right? He was a country boy with an eye for the city, and he finally couldn't wait any longer. He wanted to run off to town and find some excitement. Now, the crux of the matter is that his inheritance mattered more to him than his family obligations, than his relationship with his father and his brother. Certainly, it mattered more than his integrity, Right? Jesus warned one time, beware of covetousness. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. But this young man just never really registered that. Now, the book of Proverbs says that there are at least five things that are more important than money. It talks about reputation, talks about wisdom, integrity, knowledge, and relationships. And in the New Testament, we find there's even another that's more important than the others, and that's that salvation is more important than money. What does it profit a man, Jesus said, if he gains the whole world, but he loses his soul? Now, probably everybody in this room would agree cognitively that things like integrity and relationships and certainly salvation are more important than money. The problem is we have trouble living that out. We just do because of the culture we live in, because of the pressure in our lives that we put on ourselves. We get obsessed with money and with possessions. Why? Well, I think there's several reasons why. One simply is peer pressure. We want what everybody else has. You know, a young couple is living in an apartment, and they go over to visit some friends who were in a new house, and they leave, and they gripe the whole way home. How come they have a new house, and we're stuck in this apartment? You know, we're just as sharp as they are. We work just as hard as they do. Their furniture goes back to Louis the 14th. Our furniture goes back to Rent-A-Center on the 15th if we don't make the next payment. You know, it's just not fair. And the seeds of envy get sown. You know, I think we struggle sometimes, especially as young adults, because of the lifestyle of our parents. I mean, many baby boomers, those who were born after World War II up until the early 60s, most baby boomers live at a standard now that is well above their parents' standard of living. Not all, but many. And in fact, when they moved out on their own, many baby boomers, their lives were pretty much like their parents' lives. Things just kind of looked the same. But the problem is that people in their 20s and 30s now look at what their parents have, and they want to start life at exactly where their parents are. And it took their parents years to get there. And so there's this unrealistic expectation. Advertising does not help, right? We're bombarded every day with commercials and with billboards and social media, and there's junk mail and email, and everything is designed to tell us we can't possibly be happy until we have what they're selling. A product or a service of some sort. Somebody said we've turned yesterday's luxuries into today's necessities. Proverbs 27:20 states that death and destruction are never satisfied, and neither are the eyes of man. We just want what we see. Money is not the most important thing in life, but the prodigal son, and truthfully, probably some of us overestimate its importance. Now, the prodigal son also wanted instant gratification. He prioritized money and the things money could buy, and he wanted it all right now. Verse 13, not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, and he set off for a distant country, and there he squandered his wealth in wild living. See, this inheritance would have been his in a matter of time anyway, but he graduated from the school of thought that says, why wait? Enjoy it now, pay for it later. Drive it today, no payments until April. 90 days, same as cash. You deserve this. Why wait? Now, the father agreed to give him the inheritance early, even though he was not bound to do that. It would be a very unusual request that had been made. You know, the son was grown. Maybe he felt like, look, he's so rebellious. He's got this streak in him. I'm going to have to just let him go. And even if he crashes and burns, he's got to learn for himself. I don't know why he said yes, but for some reason, he did. And this guy heads off to the far country. There's no discipline to his spending. There's no method to his madness. He wants it all, and he wants it now. And the truth is, a lot of us refuse to wait when it comes to things that we want. Rather than disciplining our desires, maybe saving for a big purchase, we want to buy today, and we haven't even paid off yesterday. We give in to impulse buying rather than planning our purchases in advance. How many of you have ever gone to the grocery store when you're hungry? I mean, we all have, right? I mean, I am dangerous at the grocery store when I'm hungry. It's like that bag of chips. How did that get in my bag, in my cart? I don't even remember putting it in there. You know, what are those, honey roasted cashews doing there? You just can't help it. It all looks so good when you're hungry. The problem It's not like that bag of chips or that can of nuts is going to bankrupt anybody, but it's an attitude towards spending where it looks good in the moment, and so we impulse buy, and we just have to have it, got to have it right now, and we lose control of our spending. I mean, it could be groceries, but it could be clothes, might be electronics. You know, some people, it's houses and cars and boats, you know, and things can get really out of control because of impulse purchasing. Now, the prodigal son, I mean, let's face it, he also spent his money on sinful activity. Verse 13 says he squandered his wealth in wild living. His older brother is a little more graphic in verse 30 when it says, yeah, he squandered his wealth on prostitutes. That's where he spent his money. And the reality is, sinful behavior, maybe just bad habits, those things can be expensive. Think about how much money is spent today on gambling, drugs, tobacco, pornography. There's just all kinds of things that have negative impact, negative influence, and yet it's expensive. You know, bad habits aren't just hard to break, they're hard to pay for. And it's a reality. The prodigal son depleted all of his resources. Look at verse 14. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. He spent everything, every red cent that he had. And we don't know if he went into debt or not. Maybe the famine came before he had a chance to set up a line of credit. But he used all of his resources. There was no thought about the future. There was no putting anything away for a rainy day. You know, no reserve to draw on at the bank. No thought of hard times that could possibly come. He just spent. Now, in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about the trap of debt. And we're going to talk about saving and investing and how important those things are. But it is vital to recognize here that he depleted everything, and he didn't have to. Right? He had an abundance when he went. He was not living hand to mouth. He just plowed his way through his entire inheritance. He indulged to the point of despair. What did Proverbs 21:20 say? A foolish man devours all that he has. The Good News version of the Bible is a little more straightforward. It says, stupid people spend all their money as fast as they get it. Now, the prodigal son story, let's say that it ended here. And Jesus told us this story so we could see a guy crash and burn because he wasted all of his resources. Jesus could have told that story. But there's so much more to this story. It's not just a foolish young man. It's a broken son who comes to his senses and he takes the necessary steps to recover financially, to recover spiritually. Now, before I show you what he did, I want to give you a bottom line for today. Some of you may not agree with this bottom line. Some of you may agree with it with your head, but not with your heart. Some of you may agree with it, but you just find that it's impossible to live out like it's true. But here's the deal. Bottom line, you can't spend your way to happiness. Okay, you just can't. You cannot spend your way to happiness. People try it all the time. And it works for a while. There are things that you can spend money on that will bring kind of a rush for a little while. But the reality is, while money can buy pleasure, it doesn't buy peace. Money can pay for fun, but it doesn't really bring fulfillment. You can pay for a security system, but money doesn't really bring security. You can pay for a companion for the night, but money doesn't buy love. Right? The reality is you cannot spend your way to happiness. But here's what you can do. Here's what we can do. We can learn from the prodigal son and from some of the mistakes he made and some of the good things that he did afterward, and maybe we can avoid some of the consequences that he faced. Let me show you his process that took him to recovery financially, spiritually, otherwise. First thing he did is he went to work. Verse 15, so he went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his field to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. See, once he discovered that he could not spend his way to happiness, the first thing that he did was get a job. And it was not a glamorous job. He was a Jew feeding pigs. That's about as low as it can go for a person of the Jewish faith. Not exactly a career goal for the young boys in Saturday morning synagogue class, okay? But he did what he had to do. And when we get into financial trouble, we need to be willing to do whatever it takes, as long as it's legal, right? Rather than looking for a quick fix, for some get-rich-quick scheme, we just need to buckle down and earn a living. The money may not be very good. Maybe You're not able to maintain the kind of lifestyle that you're accustomed to. But the truth is, God rewards those who work hard and are industrious. And like we learned last week, man, God's ticked off and displeased with those who are lazy. Now, I realize some people are out of work because, I mean, they're looking as hard as they can for a job, can't find one. That happens. But sometimes we have to settle for something less desirable until we find something that's better. You know, don't be like Cousin Eddie in Christmas Vacation, hasn't worked for 7 years because he's holding out for a management position. You know, sometimes you just got to roll your sleeves up and do something. It is easier to get a job when you have a job, right? That's true. You might need to swallow your pride, start out at the bottom, work your way up. Now, people have asked me at times in the past, what about unemployment? You know, I can make more with unemployment than I can working some menial job somewhere. And man, you know, I get that. If you've paid taxes in, unemployment is a benefit to help you in a time of crisis. But the deal is, it is a temporary arrangement. Okay, there's nothing honorable about abusing the system or looking for an easy way out. We just need to work. Now, the second thing the prodigal son did is that he honestly evaluated his condition. Verse 17, when he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? Here I am starving to death." I kind of picture this guy one day, he flings a bucket full of slop into the pigs, and there's a mud puddle there, you know, in the barnyard, and he sees a reflection of himself in this murky water, and his hair is disheveled, you know, and his robe's a mess, and his face looks gaunt, and he just thinks, how did I get here? How did this happen to me? I'm worse off than my father's servants back home. And it was time to make a change. You know, when our spending gets out of control, we become slaves to our own desires. And we're holding out for that next purchase to make us feel better because we just can't seem to get contentment in our lives. And then when that new thing, whatever it is, isn't so shiny anymore and it begins to fade, then we need something else. It always takes one more thing. Now, I'm not suggesting that we can't spend some money on pleasures, on enjoyable things. 1 Timothy 6:17 says, God provides us with everything for our enjoyment. And we often talk about how in the Old Testament, the people were commanded to tithe. 1/10 of their income was to be given to the Lord. But in Deuteronomy 14, they were told to take a tithe of their harvest and actually use it for celebration. It was to be used for feasts. They spent 1/10 of their income having a good time because they'd had a really good year. You can't spend your way to happiness, but that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy life. Okay, we can use some of our money for those kinds of things. But we also need to be honest enough to admit that sometimes the reason we're facing financial pressure is because our spending's out of control. We're out of balance, and we're just spending too much to make life comfortable or fun or whatever pleasure it might be. The prodigal son was forced to reach that conclusion in his own life. He looked at himself, came to his senses, and said, I'm a mess. And so he developed a plan, verse 18. He said, I will set out, I'll go back to my father, and I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So here's our desperate friend. He's come to his senses. He's evaluated his dilemma, and he devises a plan to get back on his feet. He's going to go home, humble himself before his father, and see if he can just be made a servant. Friends, God wants us to experience financial freedom. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to be rich, but freedom from the pressure of constant anxiety about money, from being in bondage to our desires, our extravagant lifestyle, to be in bondage to creditors. In fact, the Bible even suggests that our financial resources, our money, our possessions, these things are actually a test to see how we're going to manage them. Listen to what Jesus said in Luke 16:10. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. If you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? See, God blesses us with stuff as a test to see how we're going to handle and manage what He has given to us. Let me make some quick suggestions when it comes to the plan, establishing a plan like this this young man did in our story. And I'm suggesting these not because I'm great at them. This isn't, oh, wise Mark is sharing all of his wealth of wisdom. You know, I struggle with this stuff. But here's some things that we can work on together. We're all in this together. First thing is establish a budget. Proverbs 27:23 says, be sure to know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds, for riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. Solomon writes about how important it is to know the status of what you own. It's vital that we manage our resources and our assets, or they can just slip through our fingers and disappear. And the only way to do this is to have some kind of workable plan, some kind of budget that helps you know where your money's going. It begins with just writing out a list of what are the monthly expenses. What's the rent or the house payment, right? What are the insurance premiums? What am I tithing to the Lord? What's the internet bill? What am I spending on food? You figure out all of that, then you compare it with the money that you make, and you begin to ask, okay, is this realistic, or do I need to do some things differently? You know, Gail is the one who writes the checks and makes sure the bills get paid in our family. She does a great job with that. Years ago, when we were early in our marriage, we used the envelope system. Are you familiar with that? I mean, it was just a very straightforward thing. We had all these different envelopes that were for the major bills that we had every month. And every paycheck, we cashed a check and we put money in each envelope to make sure that we could pay for that thing, whatever it was. There's the tithe envelope, and there's gas, and there's groceries, and there's car payment, and there's rent and clothes, you know, college loan, all those kinds of things. And then every time you get paid, you divide the money up and you make sure enough goes into every envelope. The approach works as long as you don't pilfer from one envelope to pay another bill, right? You have to be disciplined about that. Now, we don't use the envelopes anymore, but still you have to make sure that each sort of budget line item is covered with the money that you have for monthly expenses. Let me give you a for instance. I looked this up this week. When it comes to budgeting, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the average American family spends just over $3,000 a year eating out. In fact, 2016 was the first year in history that Americans collectively spent more at restaurants and bars than they spent at the grocery store. Wow, it's incredible to me. Now, I don't know if this will be surprising to you or not, but restaurant food tends to be pricey. Okay, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, fast food, or it doesn't matter if it's fine dining. It's just more expensive to eat out. And especially for young couples getting started, this is a hazardous way to spend money. But a disciplined budget can really help with this. If you keep things, again, either in envelopes or you keep it on your computer, whatever, if the eat out envelope is empty, you eat in. I mean, it's just, that's the way it is. There's a budget that's established and you work off of that. You make sure you can afford a purchase before you make the purchase. Now, another thing about making a plan is that you can simplify your life. Wayne Smith preached for 40 years in Lexington, Kentucky, and he was always joking about his wife, Marge. He said Marge was so tight, you know, and of course they would have been bankrupt if it wasn't for Marge, but because he just spent and gave everything away, but she kept them, you know, solvent, okay? But he used to joke that back in the 70s when the president, one winter, asked for everybody to set their thermostats on 68 degrees to save fuel, he said, we had to turn ours up 5 degrees. You know, Marge was so tight. But the reality is, we could probably trim some things out of our budget, maybe 5 or 10%, just by shopping more carefully, by eating in a little more often, and just forcing ourselves to sleep on it before we make impulse purchases. Simplify. Maybe you need to ask yourself questions like, do I really need the latest and greatest, fastest, most expensive new phone, or would last year's phone do just as much and cost me a couple $100 less? Is a new car a wise idea, or would a late model used car work well? Maybe even better, could I make my current car last a year or two longer and save those payments and pay myself a car payment and then have more to work with later on? Maybe you say something like, do I really need a pure breed dog? Or would a lovable mutt from the pound love me just as much and still be a whole lot better than a cat? I mean, those are just the kind of questions that you can ask, okay? Listen, you can't spend your way to happiness. And that's why this third suggestion here, live within your means. Man, that's what it's all about. Live within your means. Somebody said there's three kinds of people in the world. There's the haves, the have-nots, and the have-not-paid-for-what-they-haves. And the fact is, a lot of us just aren't very mature. Instead of living on less than we make, we just bury ourselves in debt. Well, they told me it was okay that I made enough money to be able to afford those financing, that financing. And we get ourselves into such trouble because we think we have to have. We convince ourselves we can't do without, and frankly, we can't afford to do with. If we don't learn to live within our means, we're going to continue to overspend, and the stress level is just going to continue to increase. And it's not just big things like a new car or a nicer house. Sometimes it's just that nickel and dime stuff that piles up. Rick Warren said, if your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. If your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. Most of us, not all, I know there's poverty in this world, but most of us could live within our means if we're willing to discipline ourselves and exercise self-control. The prodigal son developed a plan to deal with his circumstances, and we need to do that. And then you know what he did next? He submitted to his father. That was part of the plan. Verse 19, he says to his father, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. See, the prodigal son didn't return home and waltz in the door and demand to have his old room back. No, he submitted himself, and he was humble in attitude when he came home. Now, we're going to see in a minute that the father had much bigger plans for him than to be made a servant. But it was that humility that brought him home that I think helped restore the relationship. See, no matter what kind of financial mess you might be in, maybe it's your own fault. Maybe you've been pursuing sinful habits. Maybe you've just spent and spent and spent and dug yourself into a hole. The key to beginning this process to get out of this is to submit to the father. Acknowledge that you've been in error and you're seeking restoration. You know, addictive behavior, and let's be honest, overspending is addictive behavior. The beginning to overcoming an addiction is submission to our Father in heaven. And you know, the last thing I notice about the prodigal son here is that he started immediately. Verse 20, he had just made this plan. He came up with this idea. This is what I'm going to do. And it says, so he got up and he went to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. See, as soon as he came up with this plan of action, he went home. There was no downtime, no questioning. Well, let me just sleep on this for a week or two. Let me see how maybe this famine will turn around. No, he decided what he needed to do, and he did it immediately. And I want to challenge you. Some of you need to go home today and begin some kind of a process. Maybe you're single, and you need to leave here with a determination to sit down and look at your finances, figure out where things are going, figure out what kind of person you're being by how you're spending your money, and maybe some changes need to happen. Maybe you're married, and you would confess today if you were pinned down, you know what, money is the number one fighting word in our house. And I'm not suggesting that you go to your corners and come out swinging, but you might need to go home and sit down together and really begin to work on this and talk it through. Maybe you need to create a budget. Maybe you need to see a financial counselor. Maybe you need to put a freeze on non-essential spending. Maybe you need to cut up your credit cards or just discipline yourself on your spending if it kills you. Right? It's so easy to put these things off because so many people would be glad to loan you money. Glad to give you another credit card, but I'm telling you, it will bite you if you don't get it under control. You cannot spend your way to happiness. When I was growing up, I learned how to play chess. Didn't learn how to play it well. I just kind of learned the basic moves that the different pieces made, and I played it sometimes with my friend Rick down the street. Now, we never really even finished a lot of games because we just stumbled along kind of doing what we thought we knew we were doing. But here's the problem for us. We really weren't strategizing to play the game. We just liked to capture each other's chess pieces. So we kind of played it more like chess or checkers than like chess. We just wanted to accumulate more and more pieces. And I got to thinking, a lot of people play chess like that they just want to capture their other opponent's pieces, and they lose sight of what's really important. Well, what's the key to chess? It's protecting your king while you go after the other person's king. It's all about the king and strategizing around that. And I got to thinking about life, and a lot of people play at life like a bad chess player plays chess. They accumulate and accumulate and accumulate, and they take their eye off of the king, and they lose everything. They get so focused on getting more and more and more that they forget about what's most important. Jesus said, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world, everything, and loses his soul? Friends, Jesus is the king of our lives. He's the king of our money. He is the king of everything, our destiny. And so we must not lose focus on what's most important. Now, before we pray, I got to show you one last thing about the parable, because this is the beautiful part in verse 22. So this son has humbled himself before his dad. He's so broken. He's so desperate. And the father says to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and he's alive again. He was lost and now he's found. And so they began to celebrate. The prodigal son humbled himself. He came home and he's restored. He's restored financially. He's restored relationally. He's restored spiritually. It's just such a beautiful story. And listen, I'm going to guess that you're somewhere in this story, because I think we all are. Maybe you'd be honest enough to say, you know, like the prodigal, I've been spending like there's no tomorrow and things are spiraling out of control for me. Maybe you are career-wise in the pig pen right now and you're working a job that can't possibly get you out of debt. All you're doing is just barely eking by and things are kind of desperate for you. Maybe you're like the son heading toward home. You've got a plan, you're working toward it, but you're just getting started. Or maybe you'd say, you know what, I'm doing pretty well right now. I'm good with the Lord. I feel like I'm on top of things financially. But I think we're all somewhere in this story. And the beauty of this is that God wants to forgive the past. God is eager to help us get a fresh start, and God will help us be restored. He's not going to fix the mess of your finances without your help, but you probably aren't going to be able to do it without his help either. You cannot overspend. You can't spend your way to happiness. But if we surrender to him, we surrender our checkbook, our finances, all of our hearts, then we can have freedom in Christ.